One of his biggest lasting legacies, certainly, you know, globalization is the big deal to him. He wants this to be a worldwide brand. You know, soccer happens to be my favorite sport besides the NBA, and you know, that's certainly a global game where it's actually much bigger everywhere else but the United States. But I'd say the NBA is right there with it. It's, you know, you can't really say closing the gap, but it definitely has a global presence. And kind of models itself after soccer. I know that is important to Stern.
That was an interview with Mark Stein from ESPN, the magazine, ESPN.com. We're joined by our good friend Rick Bucher, who is a regular, let's make sure everybody knows, a regular on this show. How are you, Rick?
Thank you. Thank you for that acknowledgement.
Hey, we are very lucky to have you.
I'm well.
What's your comment on that, David Stern, and making it a global sport? What are the possibilities of the NBA becoming a global league, looking at the difficulty the NFL has had to export it to Europe, for instance?
I wouldn't compare it to the NFL because football, American football, simply is not something that is bred in to the sporting life of other teams, or other countries, rather. I'm being paged by my little 2-year-old swimmer Maddie, whose shoe has come off, and he has Oreo around all over his face. It's a tragedy. Anyway,
so you're the commissioner for him.
As far as the world situation, basketball is in a lot of places number two sport in a lot of countries. So making that switch for the NBA is certainly easier than for the NFL. Quite honestly, it's the only place that they have to grow, because they've saturated and tapped out this market. And David Stern is nothing if not a great marketer and a great businessman. So it makes all the sense in the world. It's much easier to export. The challenge is that it used to be that U.S. basketball and the NBA was considered the best talent in the world, and because of our travails in the international game of late, that is taking a bit of a hit. Now, it remains to be seen whether that's going to impact the marketability of the NBA across the globe.
Talking with Rick Bucher from ESPN, the magazine, ESPN's regular correspondent on the NBA. Let's talk about the selection process. We had the NFL All-Star Game, certainly such a chance for injury in the NFL, and you saw actually top quarterback Drew Brees hurting his elbow, out for 2 months because of that. Of course, that's after the season, but still, it says a lot about the ambivalence that teams and players have to playing in it. But before we get to that, let's talk about the selection process itself and how you think it might be improved.
Well, I don't know if you necessarily, for me, you have to do it one of two ways. You either make it a full-blown popularity contest, which is how the first five spots are decided, because it's by fan vote, and you acknowledge that this is just a popularity contest. You make it the players that the public wants to see in a mid-season exhibition, and you don't attach the idea that these are the best players in the league at this given time, because quite clearly they're not. Shaquille O'Neal, as good as he's been in the past, was not the best center in the league this year, and yet he was the number one vote-getter among centers in the Eastern Conference. So there's always going to be that dichotomy. And but on the flip side, you have the coaches selecting the reserves, and that should be based on the guys who are having the best season. So my feeling is you should go one way or the other. You either make it a legitimate selection all the way around, whether it's having the players select them, whether it's having the coaches select them, whether it's having a panel of media select them, or a combination. Either do that, or just widen it, make it all fan voting, and go that direction. Because right now it's a mixed bag, and people get a little confused over exactly what sort of excellence to attach to All-Star credibility, and as it stands, see, you've got two different ways of selecting an All-Star, and that's where the confusion starts.
Rick, how big a surprise was it to you? How bizarre was it to you that Carmelo initially was left off?
A, a, I was astonished because initially when he received the 15-game suspension, I thought that's the end of his chances of being selected as an All-Star, because the coaches, by and large, use this not simply to recognize the players who are playing the best this season, but they also use it as a carrot for guys that they feel are upstanding citizens and play the right way. It's why Dennis Rodman and Rasheed Wallace have not been perennial. Rodman was not a perennial All-Star. Rasheed Wallace has not been a perennial All-Star, even though based on talent, those guys certainly should have been there more than they have been. So it's always been that sort of a carrot. But at the time, I had a chance to talk to Carmelo, and he felt confident that he was still going to make it. And I called some coaches, and I only spoke to three or four of them, but they all said they didn't think that the suspension would get in the way, that they didn't look at the incident in Madison Square Garden as being that much of a black mark against him. So when he wasn't selected, I was absolutely surprised. This would have been the first time in the history of the NBA that the leading scorer in the league was not selected as an All-Star. And obviously David Stern has corrected the oversight by making him an injury replacement for Yao Ming. But that said, it astonished me that the coaches did not recognize the kind of season that he's had. I certainly would have selected Carmelo Anthony over Allen Iverson, and just as I would have selected Josh Howard over Tony Parker. Sometimes in these cases, the coaches, I'm not sure that they fill out the ballots. Sometimes it's an assistant coach, or maybe it's their secretary. So maybe that was the reason. But in any case, it was a glaring oversight, and it's good that David Stern has corrected it.
I hope they signed something at the bottom attesting and promising that it's them themselves that did the voting. Let's shift to a couple teams we haven't talked much about, starting with the Cavaliers. They beat the Lakers yesterday, and a guy named Sasha Pavlovich, who was averaging, I think, under 5 points a game until the last seven games, took over the game.
Yeah, I've been watching Sasha for a while. He's one of those guys like Jason Capono in Miami who's had trouble getting on the floor because he's not much of a defender, but with the way the game's being played now and the emphasis on offense, he's always been a great shooter, as is Capono, and there's becoming a greater need and necessity to have those guys. And his up and down season is also a reflection of the problems in Cleveland, in that the coach, Mike Brown, believes that they're only going to win based on their defense. He wants to play guys according to how they play defense. He wants the focus of the energy to be at the defensive end. He wants the game played slowly because that benefits your defense. And the players, by and large, have a different opinion. They feel that, hey, we need to play up and down. We need to play faster. And so until they get that worked out, the Cavaliers are not going to meet expectation. And one of the things that made them so lethal in the playoffs last year was when they just sort of spread the court, they put the ball in LeBron James's hand, they had him penetrate, and if he couldn't get to the cup, he was kicking it out to guys like Pavlovich and Danielle Marshall and some of the other long-range shooters that they have, and it worked. It had the Detroit Pistons on the ropes. This year, they've gone back to a different offensive system. It's a little more structured, and it has had mixed results. And the biggest issue that any coach or team ever faces is when the players don't believe in the system that you're trying to get done. That is number one. That whatever it is, it does. Everybody knows the same X's and O's. The biggest challenge a coach has is in getting his team to believe in it and put their energy into making it work. And when you don't have that, you are always going to struggle.
Talking with Rick Bucher from the NBA's coverage through ESPN, and Cavaliers 30-22. The Pistons 31-18 and 10-3 since Chris Webber came back. It's taken a lot of pressure off Rasheed Wallace.
He has, and people forgot, just because of the travails in Philadelphia, what a good player Chris Webber is. And he's also, in going to Detroit, goes to the perfect situation because guys like Rasheed Wallace and Tayshaun Prince do a great job of taking of protecting him defensively, which allows you to keep him on the floor and take advantage of his offensive talents. He's a very unselfish player, so I never had any doubt that he would be able to fit in to their offense. He's a great facilitator. He's a great passer. And the other element here is that the Pistons, because of the development under Rick Carlisle when he was there and Larry Brown, have always been a dedicated man-to-man defensive team. And since Flip Saunders has been there, he was a guy who started using the zone in Minnesota. Guys were a little reluctant to pick it up in Detroit, but that is starting to show. And their zone defense is becoming a serious problem for a lot of teams.
In our last 20 seconds with Rick Bucher, Houston 16-7 without Yao, 16-11 with him. What's going to happen when he comes back?
That's a great question. Everybody thinks that they're just going to sail off into the sunset and be great, but they've played two dramatically different styles, and making those styles mesh is always a challenge. And then it depends on what kind of conditioning he's in, because they were still able to play a fairly fast pace because he did such a great job of getting into shape and extending his endurance. All of that has been erased as a result of this injury. So I wouldn't count on them being terrific. If they stumble at least initially when he comes back, don't be surprised.
Rick Bucher, appreciate it, buddy. As always, we'll see you in a couple weeks, my man.
You got it.
Take care. Rick Bucher, covering the NBA for ESPN, covering it for Head Games Radio. We'll be right back. With a Hall of Famer talking about winning and losing competitiveness on and off the field as a wide receiver, about the Super Bowl and more, with Steve Largent, former congressman and a winner in my book, on Head Games on Sports Byline and Sirius Channel 122. Stay well.